In some respects, I have no idea what it's like to not be free. I suspect that's true for most of the people in this room right now. Most of us at least, grew up in this country, which has been, in many respects, the definition of freedom over time for so many of us. Most of us have not had our choices significantly limited in any way since we were small children. Freedom is a little bit difficult then for us to fully appreciate, perhaps. You know that Dana and I lived in Slovakia for 5 years. This is a nation where the kind of freedom we enjoyed in the 45 years previous to that time had not enjoyed that kind of freedom. It affects a person to be in that circumstance. On the other hand, I believe I can say, if I understand Scripture correctly, that it's also true that everybody in this room either has experienced or is experiencing a lack of freedom. As Jesus in John chapter 8, we read this earlier on this week, talks to some of his Jewish disciples, he talks to them about that kind of slavery and what that feels like. What is it like to be not free and then to experience freedom? In John chapter 8, verse 31, 32, and note this first sentence, Jesus said to the Jews who had believed him. So it's important as we go through this lesson that we acknowledge the fact that we're talking about people who have professed some allegiance to Jesus. These are not people who have rejected him. These are not the people who ultimately were responsible for his cruel death. These are people who listened to what Jesus said, acknowledged, as so many did, that what he said sounded more like what God had been trying to sell them throughout the centuries than what they were currently practicing. These are good folks. And Jesus makes this statement, "If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." Now this is John 8:32 is one of those sound bites, I've come to call them, that we're just all very familiar with. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. On Fried Arman's campus, our Alpha Chi Honor Society uses this phrase as key to the pledge that they make to do the very best that they can. The pursuit of truth is honorable even if you are not Christian. People pursue truth. Even Pilate, when Jesus acknowledged in questioning who he was and went through this period of interrogation and talked about truth, Pilate says, "Truth? What is truth?" That reveals at least one of two perspectives. One perspective is that Pilate did not believe in truth, that he'd seen so much that couldn't be pinned down in his lifetime that he didn't feel like a person would be able to identify truth at all. Another possibility is that he acknowledged that truth was something to be pursued. Whether or not we see it at any given point doesn't change the fact that it exists. So Pilate's statement could be construed as saying, "I'm not sure if this is truth, and I'm not sure if I've ever really heard any of it." We live in a world which questions that, and it's not the purpose of this lesson to talk about the loss of objective truth as a result of changes in our society or our culture. It's really to call attention to the fact that Jesus points us to some truths that are critical to our being free. There is no freedom in the absence of truth. It's ironic in a way because there are so many people who have rejected the idea of objective truth because it limits, or at least appears to limit, their freedom. And in so doing, they actually cut themselves off from true freedom. You shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. In what sense is that a true statement? We believe it's a true statement because we believe in Jesus. The people who heard that statement made for the first time are also believers in Jesus. Yet there's a series of questions and a series of comments that move forward from there that reminds us that it's a little bit difficult to pin down unless we identify the key elements of that kind of truth and that kind of freedom. So I ask you, what is it like to be free? If I were to ask all of you to take out the connections card on the back of the seat in front of you and write down a short definition of freedom, and you don't have to do that right now, but I would like for us at least to think about it in that way. What would your definition include? Maybe you could approach it from the other standpoint. What does it mean to not be free? What would it take for you to not feel free? My guess is there's some folks sitting in this auditorium right now who do not feel like you're free, who feel like you are bound by certain things against your will. Somebody else is calling the shots in your life. It may be a parent. It may be a child. It may be an employer. It may be a bank. Somebody is impinging upon your freedom, you might say. And if you think about the opposite of that, you might define that in terms of, well, freedom means I get to do whatever I want. Freedom means I don't owe anybody. Freedom is nobody tells me what to do. Is that freedom? Well, no big surprise here. None of those are how Jesus defines and describes freedom. So what is freedom? Well, first of all, I would suggest from the passage in question right now that freedom is not about who you are. I remember growing up, I was not immune to the reality that I was nearly invisible in high school, junior high and high school, and that there are other people who seemed to get at least special perks because of who they were. Well, here, Jesus' followers, these believing people, say, well, we're offspring of Abraham. We've never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say you will become free? If you say you will become free, there's the insinuation that you're not currently free, or that you at least are in jeopardy of not being free, or you could lose that freedom in some sense. These followers say, wait just a minute here. We're Abraham's children. We're a part of the in group. We belong. Now, they go a little bit too far here when they say they've never been enslaved to anybody. Had they never read the Hebrew Bible? I mean, everybody that came through the Fertile Crescent beat up the Israelites and stole their lunch money. I mean, they are not always free. As a matter of fact, at the exact moment when these words are being spoken, remind me if this is correct, are not the Israelites, the nation of Israel, under the domination of Rome at this very moment that we're talking about here? The audacity. Now, to be fair, I suppose what they are saying is that ultimately we are the people of God. They know that Jesus is talking about a spiritual reality here, not a physical reality. And in that sense, maybe it's true that they ultimately, because they are offspring of Abraham, are free. They have always had access to God, and they always had the option to choose a lifestyle that would be pleasing to God and therefore to not be spiritual slaves. I'll give them that. But that's not the totality of what's going on here, is it? And certainly not everything that Jesus wants them to think about. Here in these two verses, they express their perceived freedom by virtue of who they are. It's interesting, you'll notice that I've got Matthew chapter 3 and verse 9 up on the screen as well. That passage says, in regard to another conversation, the Israelites saying, we're children of Abraham, we're part of the in-group, and Jesus says, the Father can make out of these rocks more children of Abraham. That is not going to do it. You're not really all that special simply because of whose great, 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 great grandchild you are. No big deal to be a child of Abraham in that sense of the word. If you think that means that you're entitled to the kind of treatment that you want or the kind of treatment that would benefit you in some kind of spiritual sense, you're going to have to look elsewhere, because who you are has never been a guarantee of freedom. It was not then, it's not now. Well, if you go on further, you see that Jesus also speaks to life circumstances. We don't always like our circumstance, but we like to attribute things to our circumstances. If we've done something good, then we like to say, well, you know, circumstances have resulted. I'm the captain of my own destiny. I can do certain things, and it puts me in an ideological position where I can say, okay, this is the good place that I'm in, and that's the circumstances I've got to enjoy, and I'm going to try to hang on to those. It's about the circumstances. If things are going badly, then we don't want to take responsibility for that. We want to say, here's the deal. I've got a bad set of circumstances, and that's why things are the way they are. So maybe I'm free, say the followers of Jesus here, because of my circumstances. Maybe I'm free because freedom is just a given. It's just a reality. Now, again, there is a sense in which that's true. God has always permitted people to make decisions for freedom. Even when I was growing up, I thought I was not free to make my own decisions. My parents had done a really good job of persuading me of that. All you children, plug your ears. The truth is, you can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. You cannot do whatever you want without negative consequences. But you can do whatever you want to. I could have disobeyed my parents. It seemed like a really dangerous proposition, given some of the things that they had promised and those promises that they'd kept from time to time. I wasn't sure that I would be allowed to live to adulthood should I choose to disobey them. After all, you'll be reminded, they'd made my brother and I was pretty well convinced they could make more. So, you know, no big deal if they lost one. Obviously, my parents loved me, but I have to come to grips at a certain point in my life that I am indeed responsible for my freedom. It's mine. But spiritual freedom, similarly, is a response to choices that I make. It's connected not merely to my circumstances. I can't blame my circumstances if things are not good for me spiritually. Well, it'd be a whole lot easier to be a Christian X number of years ago, for example, when the culture was more supportive of Christian ideals. You ever thought that? I bet you some people in here have. But that's blaming your circumstances for your lack of spiritual attainment or your lack of spiritual position in relation to God. Now, while the followers of Jesus here were wrong, technically speaking, to say they'd never been enslaved, it is true that they had always been free, at least in terms of making their own choices. But even our choices are not responsible for our freedom the way that Jesus is thinking about this. You see, freedom is not about getting your way. When I was younger, I sure enough thought that's what freedom was about. If I got to do what I wanted to do, that was a signal that I was free. If I didn't get to do what I wanted to do, that was a signal that I wasn't free. It seems fairly simple, doesn't it? Well, Jesus reigns on all this too. Truly I say to you, everyone who practices sin, and that's an option that you have, that's a choice you can make, that everybody who practices sin is a slave to sin. Now this, of course, is where Jesus wanted to get, isn't it? He's not thinking about whether or not they have the personal autonomy to be able to make decisions about their lifestyle. He's not thinking about who they are in comparison to other people. He's not thinking about the degree of opportunity that might be available to them. What he's saying is, if you choose to practice sin, you can never be free. There is no such thing as a free sinner. Now, don't get distracted here. It's true that all of us continue to sin. But after we are covered by the grace of God, we're no longer described as sinners in that way. That's not characteristic of our lifestyle. We are freed from that. And at that point, we have the choice about whether or not we will again renew our status as slaves to sin by our own willfulness, or whether we will continue to reject that in a faith response to the grace of God. You choose. You get that kind of freedom, freedom at that level. But if you exercise that freedom in selfishness and follow sin as a practice, then you have become the slave to your practice. Isn't it true that all of us bind ourselves to certain things by the choices that we make, certain things that are mutually exclusive? I cannot be in two places at once. If I'm here right now, I cannot be watching the Cardinals play baseball at the same time, not physically at least. And since I'm preaching, it's probably going to look pretty bad if I get out my iPhone and start checking the scores. One choice entails rejection of something else. Our life is full of those kinds of decisions. There's a sense in which when we choose something, we are accepting the responsibilities associated with that thing and the consequences associated with that choice. Jesus says, if you practice sin, if sin is an ongoing part of your lifestyle, that now owns you. Right? It now calls the shots in your life. You think, no. See, I'm choosing to practice or not practice, therefore I own my sin. That's not the way Jesus characterizes it. He says, when you make those kinds of choices, and the choices are indeed yours to make, God does not control our choices in that regard. But when you begin to make those choices, and when sin is now characteristic of your lifestyle practice, then you have become obligated to that. In other words, you will do what that sinful lifestyle calls you to do. Don't believe it? Think about something that you have gotten in the habit of doing badly and how difficult it was to stop it. We sometimes make reference to people who have some form of addiction. Perhaps they are addicted to substance of some kind, alcohol or drugs. Lately we hear an awful lot about sexual addiction. We're describing people who are doing something and cannot seem to stop doing it. And the holy ones of us set back go. But I'll just tell you of myself, there are some things that I have done wrong that I have had a really hard time stopping. And I have felt myself enslaved to those things. No big surprise here. Jesus is right. Those lifestyle sorts of things that we're involved in master us. And we need something just as profound as a jailbreak to get out of them. We are enslaved by those things. And what we need is what anybody who is a prisoner would need, and that is they need a rescue. They are slaves to that sin. So I ask us again, on the basis of those kinds of observations, what does it feel like to be free? If we have some sense of what it feels like to be enslaved, what would it feel like if we were free? Just two things for your consideration. Jesus answers, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices a sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The Son remains forever. So if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. What's Jesus saying here? Is there something that I can do to remove myself from the slavery of sin? Is that mentioned anywhere in this passage? No. What is mentioning, only thing that I have done that affects my slavery-freedom equation is to get myself into that problem. I'm a slave, but the slave need not remain in the house. The Son remains forever. There is something that Jesus is doing here that's significant. He is making a distinction or a contrast between the slave and the family member. And he says, your slavery will not let you free. You can't sin yourself into less sinning any more than you can dig further into your jail cell to be less slave, enslaved. You need somebody else. You need the Son. The slave doesn't remain in the house forever, but the Son remains forever. He can outlast sin. He is more powerful than sin. And if He sets you free, you are truly free. He has the authority to do that. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 28, verse 18, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. We tend to think about that in the context of the Great Commission, which follows, go into all the world and make disciples of everybody. But that's an absolute statement. All authority, including the authority to forgive sins. In Mark chapter 2, that's what gets Jesus in trouble at the time of the healing of that paralyzed man, because He doesn't just immediately heal the man. He says, son, your sins are forgiven you. And the people say, who does this man think he is? Same story in Luke 5. Who does this man think he is? No one can forgive sins except God alone. And the answer is, they were right. Jesus has that kind of authority over sin. He will not force you to abandon sin. But if you will purpose to abandon sin, He has the authority to rid your life of sin's domination and to set you free from the self-imposed prison in which you have put yourself. He has that kind of power because He is the Son. He is the only, unique, son of the king of the entire world. He has the ability to come in and say, I know what these folks have done. I know what this person has done. But don't keep him captive. Don't hold him hostage. Let's show him that sin need not dominate. So the first thing that Jesus says is that freedom is about relationship. Notice what he says in John chapter 5, verse 19. Truly I say to you, the Son can do nothing of his own but what he sees the Father doing. For whatever the Father does, that also the Son does. In other words, what Jesus does, his entire mission, is God's mission. Jesus prays this, right? In Matthew chapter 26, not my will, but your will be done. Jesus was about that all of his life. Jesus doesn't come along with a teaching of his own, a ministry of his own. It's God's teaching. It's God's ministry, shared with him by the Holy Spirit of God and enacted in his own life and proclaimed in the lives of others. That's what he's doing. But I want you to notice this. Jesus' relationship with his Father affects his choices. And our relationship with him affects our status as well. Whatever the Father does, that the Son does. And whatever the Son does, if that will be our pursuit, we will be freed from sin. It's about relationship. It's about the opportunity to come into His presence, experience closeness and intimacy with Him, and have Him be the most profound influence on the things that we do day by day, week by week, year by year, throughout our lives. Freedom is first and foremost about who you're related to. If you are the son of the king, you don't live in the prison. You live in the palace. That's what he intended. Freedom is about relationship. He goes on, if you look back just a little further in verses 31 and 32, again, we started in this spot. Notice this language that we breezed by rather quickly the first time through. Jesus said to the Jews who believed him, if you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. There is a challenge present in this text, isn't there? John has already told us that these are Jews who are believers. Now Jesus says, okay, you're believers. If you truly want to be disciples, you've got to be guided by my word. Only then will you be in relationship with me, and only then will the truth that I reveal transform your life. It's about truth. And not just truth in that sort of objective, broad, generic sense. It's about His truth. Truth that can only be revealed in relationship. Have you noticed that as Jesus conducted His ministry, He didn't just rent a big public forum somewhere and just preach to people who dropped by. He discipled. He invited them to spend time with Him. And in the context of that relationship, Jesus shared truth. Truth can be preached, but truth is best experienced in relationship with the Lord. These 12 men who spent 3 years and assorted others, we know there were more than that because when they got ready to pick Judas's replacement, they were able to talk about people who had been with him and followed him from the very beginning, people like Matthias and others. These are people who got to experience what truth looks like when it's lived out. And this is persuasive and compelling. People who heard Jesus preach a few times don't go out and change the world. But people who had day by day walked with Him and gotten a chance to see how this truth works itself out in day by day decisions, those people know truth. And that truth sets them free. It did them, and it will us. It's about relationship. It's about truth. Those things should never be separated. We understand the truth of Jesus within relationship, and a relationship with Jesus necessarily requires a dedication to the truth. It's true what Jesus says to these disciples. If the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. Free indeed. Real freedom. Not that kind of superficial freedom that says, right now I'm getting to do what I want. Not that kind of freedom that says, me and my people are at the top of the pile. But the kind of freedom that says, I am in relationship with the Son who liberates me from the bondage of sin and provides me the opportunity to join Him not only in this life, but throughout eternity. That's free indeed. I've seen it as you have, I think, all my life. I've experienced it. Times when I was not enjoying that kind of freedom. I hope and pray that there is nobody in this room right now who's there. But I think that would be naive. Quite naive to think that there is nobody who has worshipped his or her own will more than their willingness to submit to God. I'd like to think that that everybody in here who is accountable for their sins has made a faith response, turned away from sin, confessed the name of the Lord, and had his or her sins washed away in water like this. I'd like to think that was the case, but possibly it's not. Possibly there's somebody who's still in slavery to sin. Don't leave here in bondage. You can be free indeed. In Hebrews chapter 6, verses 4 through 6, there's a heartbreaking text. It suggests that even those who have once been enlightened, who have tasted the heavenly gift, who've enjoyed that kind of intimate relationship with God through Christ, can fall away. How heartbreaking. I pray to God there is nobody in this room right now who is in that circumstance. But possibly there is. Possibly your heartbreak and frustration and despair as a result of sin is all the more tragic because you know what freedom feels like. But you're not there now. Is it you? If so, the good thing about the freedom that Jesus offers is that it can be reinstated at any moment. Don't leave this building tonight under bondage to sin. Maybe you have some other kind of need. It can be spiritual. It can even be physical or emotional. Something you're carrying that's too heavy for you. Don't try to carry it another day. God called us into His family so we would not have to be alone. So we would not have to bow ourselves under the weight of things that are too heavy for us. I hope that's nobody in this room. But if it is, let us know. Let us try to help. We've all been on the receiving end of that kind of help. We'd be happy to try to be on the giving end. If you need anything at all, and if we can be of service to you, would you make that known by coming as we stand and sing together?